So welcome to the show. This is a general audience kind of participation show. So if it's a bad show, whose fault is it? Well, that's nice of you to accept that. Usually I get blamed for it. Yeah, have you met Sarah, everyone? Sarah Nix, ladies and gentlemen, on my left. She is the voice of What Do You Know? And Blackhawk, sorry about that. Next year. Keep the shirt. Don't throw it away. Right? I'll be back. And Bears, I can't help you. Is that a Bears shirt? No, okay. Never mind. And then, of course, we have any of you interested in the What Do You Know quiz actually playing it? Yeah, okay. Sorry, I can't help you there. We changed format. We're not doing the quiz thing anymore. That's passé. No, yeah. So. You're a librarian? Well, you should be restricted from playing these sorts of things because you know everything. Librarians do. Well, in China, a 3,000-year-old pair of pants has been found, but the belt is still missing, so it can't wear them. Well, what do you know?
Not much, you.
Live from Moorhead, Kentucky to Fargo, North Dakota, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, a matrimonial hotline, all the news that isn't, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who's the Tetris of public radio, it's Michael Feldman.
Tetris. Yeah, 3,000-year-old pants. I'm really stuck on that old notion. You know, if they're 10 years old, you can't wear them anymore because you can't get into them. Or they have cuffs or something, or they're pleated, you know. But 3,000 years old, a lot of problems with those. In all the non-trouser news that isn't, former Dolphins quarterback Dan Marino sues the NFL for concussions but says the contusions are on him. Clippers owner Donald Sterling will rake in a 16,000% return on the sale of the Clippers. I should be so senile. Of course, the wife gets 8,000%, so it makes a difference. Sterling said he doesn't want his tombstone to say, "Here lies a mental incompetent and a racist." Not at $20 a letter, you know, tombstone. Cost a fortune. In the Bo Bergdahl case, biggest unanswered question still, his dad's beard. What is with his dad's beard? Okay. The economy has recovered all jobs lost in the 2008 crash except yours. Sorry, says the economy. The Koch brothers give $25 million to the United Negro College Fund to go to the first African American willing to be a Negro scholar. New study finds that babies exposed to dirt are hard to keep clean. Cynicism may hurt your brain health. Doubtful. Thank you. Oklahoma repeals the federal education standards and will instead recruit Chinese students to raise scores. Uber has been valued at $22 billion. Now try and get a ride from one of these guys. Why should he even stop? $22 billion. Smokers do not experience hearing loss. They're just tired of hearing about it. Botanists say that plants have sex by promising one another a rose garden. These are all actual findings. I don't know. The fact there were no free donuts on Dunkin' Donuts National Donut Day causes a police riot in Boston. King Juan Carlos of Spain abdicates because he just didn't feel it anymore. You know, at first he thought it was just having a bad day. We all feel like abdicating some days. But then your oldest moves back home and you think maybe they're not ready for the throne yet. Just kidding, Ellie. They're all abdicating these days, actually. He wasn't the first, except for Queen Elizabeth because of Charles, you know. You don't want that getting in the throne. In other news, Willy Wonka sworn in as president of Ukraine. The chocolate guy. Russians will now invade to find the golden ticket. That really is. They find that neurotic robots act more human but tend to lock Kira D'Elia out of the spacecraft when having a bad day. This weekend we're down to the wire between California Chrome and the Beast Asteroid. They're supposed to arrive at the same time, so I'm taking Chrome because it's got the nasal strip. Should get there first. The CIA joins Twitter, follows everybody. covering all bases, Lego launches a female minifigure scientist line and a male homemaker and caregiver line. So they're really hedging all their bets in this controversy, this Lego controversy. Apple runs out of large cats, turns to national parks with its Yosemite operating system. Hopefully the next one will not be the Grand Tetons. Hopefully, I say. I hope it will, actually, as I think about it more. Wisconsin's tavern to grocery ratio is number one in the nation, and the tavern to church ratio is even higher. And finally, Norwegian bachelor farmers are darn close to smiling as Wisconsin's ban on same-sex marriages is overturned. And that's all the news. That is it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And this has nothing to do with anything in particular. I just sort of amazed by this. A German museum exhibits Van Gogh's ear replica grown from relative cells. Did you see that? I don't know what to make of this. I don't have the equipment to deal with this story. A German museum has put on display a copy of Vincent Van Gogh's ear that was grown using some of the Dutch artist's genetic material. Finally, he gets the ear replaced, but it's really took a long time. Yeah, the 19th century painter is said to have cut off his own left ear during a psychotic episode. Psychotic is a little strong. In 1888, the Center for Art and Media says a replica ear consists of living cells grown from samples by the great-great-grandson of Vincent's brother, Theo, Leeuw van Gogh. The museum says Leeuw and Vincent van Gogh share about 1/16th of the same genes, including the Y chromosome that is passed down through the male lineage. The artist Dimut Stribe told the Associated Press on Tuesday she wanted to combine art and science. The ear will be displayed in New York next year. This is just a public service announcement, I guess. I don't just rather amazed by that. Well, speaking of overturning the ban on marriage, now we can all get married. And it's a great thing here in Wisconsin and in most states. And it just so happens, of course, we have a call-in on people going to get married at the moment, because Saturday is a good day in June, good time to get married. It goes back to when John was getting married, and he didn't want to talk about it at all. How long have you been married now?
Seems like a long time. 2001, I think it was.
2001? Yeah. Okay. Momentous year, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyhow, and then John wouldn't want to talk about it, so he wanted people to call in who were actually getting married, on their way to get married, just to give them a little encouragement, to open up a little
bit. And if they would want to be anonymous, could they do that? They wouldn't have to necessarily like spill the whole beans on who they are?
Oh, no, yeah, sure, whatever they want to do. Anyhow, people who are out getting married right now, or on their way to get married, or have just gotten married, or are coming, or are celebrating after getting married, that's the hotline today. We'd like to hear from you what's going on, and marriages of all sorts, and how do they do that?
They dial 1-800-942-5669, which is also 1-800-WHA-NO or 1-800-WHACK-NOW.
Okay.
And tell you all about it.
All right. Marriage time. Let's hear what's going on if you're on the way and you're getting to the church on time, or you're in front of City Hall. It's still lined up in front of City Hall, I think, here in Madison, right?
Could be. There was quite a party out there last night.
Yeah. You were down there?
I was. The cops brought cake.
The cops?
It was very great.
Isn't that nice? Okay. 1-800-942-5669. Is that correct?
1-800-942-5669.
All right. If you're out there getting married, on your way to get married, or got it coming up this weekend, let's hear what's going on there. Maybe you're standing up for a wedding or sitting down, no matter what posture you're in. That's the number to call, 1-800-942-5669. Let's go to our marriage hotline. What's going on right now as we speak across the country and around the world? Justin, is Justin there? I see Justin. But I don't see that thing lit up there. He's in Memphis. And he's
trying to be anonymous.
What? Why? What's? Where's the shame in marriage? Anonymous. Well,
you've been married for a long time, and you know. Think about it.
Okay. Point is well taken. Justin, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. I wasn't too sad. I was just, you know, marriage is a great thing, and sometimes happens later in life. And I was just wondering what was going on this morning, and I. Yeah. Just love your show.
Oh, thank you.
Glad to be here.
But you're not getting married.
Not yet, but
oh, okay.
I was going to watch. I watched Company the other day by Stephen Sondheim, and yeah. They talk about marriage a lot. So
yeah,
it's kind of like getting married.
Are you thinking? You're thinking about it. You're sizing up the opportunity. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm thinking about auditioning for the show.
Oh, okay, for the show.
But anyway, I just wanted to call and say hi and thank you and have a great day.
All right, thanks, Justin. All right. We're off on the right foot here. He's not getting not even considering it, I don't think, sounds like. Mark's in Cleveland. Cleveland, hey, Mark, you getting married? Going to a marriage? Going to a wedding? What's going
no.
on? No?
No, going to work, working.
Going to work? What happened to the marriage yes. thing?
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
This sounds like What Do You Know to me, a What Do You Know approach to topics
yes,
of the day.
Sir.
Okay, all right. Are you married, though, Mark?
Yes, I am, happily.
Okay. Yeah, good. Excellent. How's that working out? Pretty good,
hey,
then, huh?
You?
Yeah. Fine, yes, fine. I'm married.
Good.
Let's just put it that way. Okay, nice talking to you anyhow.
Yes, sir.
All right. However, Nate, who's in Morgantown, West Virginia, are you rushing off to be married right now, Nate?
We are on the way to a wedding. Not our wedding, though.
Oh, okay, even better. And where's the wedding at, Nate?
It is in Somersville, West Virginia, down south.
Yeah. Is it a big affair? Is it outdoors, indoors? Is it?
It is outdoors.
Yeah.
Yeah, be a good time.
Yeah. And who are these people to you?
They are our neighbors.
Oh, your neighbors?
Yeah.
If they're neighbors, why are they in a different city entirely?
Well, good question, but I'm guessing their family is from those parts.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Sounds good. How long drive you got there, Nate?
2.5 hours, and we just left now.
Oh,
turned
okay.
on the radio and heard you asking about people heading to wedding.
Okay. Are you standing up for it, or either one of you, or?
Are we what?
Standing up, you know, part of the ceremony.
Oh no.
Okay, you're sitting down. All right.
Yep.
Thanks, Nate. This has got turned us in the right direction here. Now we're looking at marriages all over, wherever they're happening. Thanks very much. And we got Matthew on the line here from Bridgeport, West Virginia. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Michael. How are you doing?
Are you running off to be hitched?
No, not today. No. I'm my girlfriend's sister is getting married, and they've dragged me into it.
Okay. In what respect?
Well, just carrying things, setting things up. You know, I'm not actually in the wedding. I'm just a pack mule.
Oh, okay. Are you doing the PA and all that? Are you playing an instrument or something? Or
No. They wanted me to DJ, but I told them I wasn't qualified to do that.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like a fun time?
Yeah, I guess you'd say that.
Okay. Well, that's sort of getting towards the enthusiasm we were hoping to get for this. Thanks, Matthew.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Okay. He's the pack horse for a wedding. That's close. Let's go to John Smith we have here in Lawrence, Kansas. Hey, hi, John Smith.
Hi, Michael. My name is John Swift.
Oh.
Like the meat company from Chicago. Swift,
oh.
SWIFT. But
okay.
Yeah, it's a common mistake, so at least we know you're fallible. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Just like me.
No, Lyle is fallible. It says here John Smith. That's okay.
Can't get good help these days, right? You
know. Anyhow,
but they did answer the phone immediately with a real live person, which was amazing to me.
Yes. Well, it's Lyle.
And I really like your show, man. I every morning at 10 a.m., I've got to hear it.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. Now, this wedding thing, are you in on the wedding concept? Are you part of a wedding today?
Well, I got married pretty late in life. I'm in my mid-50s, and I got married last year in March. And my wife's at work, and I am caring for our new little baby boy. His name is Emerson. He's 3.5 months old.
Fantastic.
And he is being quiet and happy right now, which is great because it's a real honor to talk with you, Michael. I'm serious. I'm not buttering you up. I get such a kick out of listening to you every Saturday. I'm actually on the radio talking to you. That's cool as heck.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, and everything that's happened to you is extremely cool. I mean, at 50, right? And then now you're a dad, and it's an amazing year, huh?
I'll be 72 when Emerson graduates from high school, and I'm already ready for the comments. Oh, isn't it so sweet? Emerson's grandfather came to watch him graduate.
Yeah, I wouldn't think about it too much. Hopefully by then you'll have no memory anyhow. So.
Just like my mom.
There's always an upside to these things, you know.
But something remarkable, and you might find this interesting, was that on Father's Day last year, Nancy presented me with a little pregnancy tester thing all wrapped up saying, "Happy Father's Day, Daddy. It's positive." And so I found out on Father's Day that I was going to be a dad, and that's pretty neat.
I love getting those pregnancy testers for a gift.
But, you know,
well, it depends on the situation, really. But
I totally didn't expect it.
I was
happy being a stepfather. Yeah. And I would say, well, you know, happy Stepfather's Day, John. Well, guess what? It was So that was quite a big deal. And you know, so I'm like, is it mine?
Well, that's what you don't want to say, John.
Well, actually, I did say it, and it was funny because I'm...
Although you could re-gift it. It's always possible to re-gift something like that.
Re-gift it. Well, I think I'm going to keep this one. He came out perfectly well, and everything is fine. No concerns whatsoever. He's growing a... Apparently, Mom is putting Miracle-Grow in his formula at the speed at which he's growing, but his hair hasn't turned green, so I'm really happy.
He's got to grow quick. He's got an old dad, you know.
He's got to keep up, right?
Yeah, got to be a teenager within a few years.
Yeah.
Thanks, John. It's really nice to speak with you. Thanks for calling.
Hey, likewise. Thank you, Michael. Right. Have a great day.
Take care. Best to all. All right, and then Kevin is, where are you, on the way to Erie, Pennsylvania for a wedding, Kevin?
Yeah, I am. I'm on my way right now.
Yeah. Where are you that's not Erie? Outside of Erie, or are you?
I have no idea, to be honest.
Do you have a GPS or something? You know.
I'm on 79.
You're on 79?
I'm on 79, headed north, trying not to hit Amish people.
Okay. Good thing. They're the ones with the horses. They have horses in front.
Yeah, they're the ones with the horses.
It's not hard to see.
Really mean drivers.
They're what?
They're really mean drivers.
They're mean with what do they do? Cut you off with a buggy?
Yeah, they cut you off. Flip you the bird.
Anyway, what is in Erie, Pennsylvania? Are you going to a wedding now? Is it your wedding or someone's wedding or no wedding at all?
Yeah, I feel bad. I don't think you've gotten any people actually in a wedding. So
yeah.
I'm on my way to my cousin's wedding. So keeping up that steam.
Okay, that's the closest we got so far.
Yeah.
Are you close with your cousin?
Yeah, cousin's a good girl. Don't know the guy yet though, so I'm a little worried. Because I know Mary's really cute. She's attractive. She's smart. I don't know if she's a good judge of character though. So.
Okay, I wouldn't mention that when you get there, though. You know, keep that one to yourself. The judge of character.
I'm gonna ask around, see what the scouting report is.
Okay, good. That'll give you something to do. All right. Well, Kevin, very nice to hear from you. I hope you get there.
Yeah, nice chat.
Just stay on 79 until you hit it. You'll be fine.
All right, sounds good.
All right, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Let's see. We're going to get someone, at least from a wedding party, is what I'm hoping for. Like Marie is in Fairfield Bay, Arkansas. Is that right, Marie?
That's correct.
And are you headed out now to a wedding, or are you at a wedding?
No, I'm going. I'm getting married at 6:30 tonight.
You are.
And,
all right. Yeah. Congratulations, Marie. And big wedding, small wedding, or?
It's a medium wedding.
Yeah.
We didn't expect a big wedding because this is our second time around. We're both widowers.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't say we were old. I would say we're really old. But, but we found each other, and it made us very happy. And he was writing poetry to me immediately after I met him, and he made me fall in love with him, and so...
The poetry did it, really?
The poetry did it. He's wonderful at writing poetry, and he is 70. And I guess I used to say that I was a coyote because I'm 2 years younger than he is, older than he is. But I'm still frisky, so we decided to.
A frisky coyote is good.
Yes.
I would think.
Coyote, or is it a Calhoun? I forget what those things are.
It's a cougar.
Whatever.
It's a what?
But he's a wonderful
a cougar,
man.
That's right. A cougar. It's a cougar.
That's a cougar. See, I knew it was some kind of animal.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Coyotes are nice, though, too.
Yeah, they are, and we have them around here. They steal the chickens and do all kinds of great things. But
yeah. And so
it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, and so it's a lot of friends and family. A big ceremony, or what's the
well,
ceremony?
Well, like I said, it's a medium one.
The medium,
The children are coming, and we invited a few friends, and we ended up with 100 people. But it's wonderful. You know, people are there for you when things are bad, and when you're going to have a wonderful get together. You should never make it small. You should enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so we had lots of people.
That's great. Can we send them some stuff too?
Sure. I think we should send them everything.
Yeah. You know, we're going to send you.
Oh.
It won't get there in time.
Oh.
It won't get there
so
by 6:30. I know that, but we got some wine we can send you.
We have wine, coffee, books, games.
Yeah.
Oh my God! You guys are wonderful.
No, we're not. No, we're not. But if you know what, if you can hold everyone there for about 10 days,
okay,
it should arrive. You know, parcel post takes a while, but
hey, around here we're all old. Give them a little wine; they'll never leave.
Sounds good. And now, so can we put her on? Lyle, can you put her on hold? Because if I try to do it, I'm probably going to screw it up. Can you do it from back there?
You
make
Thank
sure
you.
We can send that out? Yes? Is that a yes?
I don't think he's listening to you.
Yes. Okay. How do I do it then? I just press hold?
Yes.
Press hold? He's
thumbs
got it?
Up. No.
He's got it?
Oh, it's... Aubrey's giving us the thumbs up.
Thumbs up means what to
Two
you, Aubrey?
Up.
I have no idea. He's always doing that.
Shaking
for some
the
reason.
Thumbs up.
This is a well-oiled machine.
Yeah. I just want to make sure we don't lose her, because then that would be a bummer. On a very magic moment.
Aubrey says we're good.
We're good. Okay. All right. Is she gone then? Yes. Bye, Marie. It was nice talking to you.
Have a good wedding.
Yes. Best wishes and everything. We got... and this is probably a mistake, but Todd has been waiting in Beaufort, South Carolina. But, you know, it's probably unrelated entirely, but I hate to just leave him there all alone. So let's see. Todd, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm good. Is this wedding related, Todd? Are you going to a wedding? Are you getting married?
Yesterday was my anniversary, June 6th, D-Day.
Yeah.
So whenever the History Channel starts showing D-Day stuff, I know I've got a week.
You got married on D-Day?
Well, the anniversary of D-Day.
Yeah, okay. You know, I got married on Veterans Day.
There you go.
It was intentional, too. I thought it was funny, you know, but it really was not.
Well, I knew it would be a good reminder.
Yes, good reminder. So, are you taking your vows again? Is that what you're doing?
No, we're only, this is 17, I think maybe 25 or so.
Yeah.
I tried to talk her the first time into going to Vegas and getting married by an Elvis impersonator. She wouldn't go for it.
You kind of sound like Elvis yourself, you know. You're very close to
really?
Elvis. Can you say thank you very much?
I teach school, the voice carries, you know, it helps.
Say thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it's always sound like Elvis, I guess. Well, that's just great, Todd, so it's going to be a nice thing. And thanks for calling. We appreciate hearing from you. And the best to you both.
I think we lost him.
Okay, we lost him. That's Todd.
Thank
and
you.
That's our
thank
attempt at
much.
Marriage, ladies and gentlemen, because marriage is always a thing in progress. Okay. Radio at its livest. Okay.
Thank you. Thank
we got
you
one,
very much.
One actual marriage there, so that's pretty good.
He did sound like Elvis. He really did. Yeah.
Until he tried to sound like Elvis.
Yeah.
So, there's that.
Yeah.
Okay, then. How are you?
Okay, good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Your shirt's not tucked in either, mister.
I know, but it doesn't have tails. See, it's, if you had a shirt with tails, the tails had to go in because that was obscene or something, if your tail was hanging out.
Maybe in 19...
Hey, let's not get into years here.
Okay.
All right. So then, what do you got here for us? A little number of some
sort?
It's
a little number, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might recognize it, might not.
I mean, it's the same one you always play?
Mm-hmm. No, never played this before.
Okay, sounds good. John Tooley, Jeff Hammond on the bass.
Five more seconds. Once again, it's Michael Feldman. Hey, Michael.
What?
We're
You're
back
up,
on.
Daddy.
Oh, I was waiting for the rest of your fundamental truths. Okay. Well, then I guess I need this microphone if you're not going to use it.
Sure.
Right. Did you want to give us a fundamental truth while you have
it? Yeah.
You don't have any fundamental truths, do you?
Okay. Well, okay, I'm just saying that I'm kind of at the age where some things are becoming apparent. For example, John. I'm at the age where my kids no longer need naps, but I do. It's not that fundamental. It's just it's kind of a truth. Okay. You know, I'm at that age where I'm back to saying, guys, don't tell Mom. You know, Michael, I'm at that age where if I say, sweetie, did you have an accident? I may not be talking to the kids.
All right, that's fundamental. All right. Very beautiful. Very beautiful thing. Some nice thoughts there on fundamental truths. From Jeff Hammond, our fundamental bassist. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Are you with him?
Yes.
Do you ever wonder about his T-shirts?
No, I usually know what they mean.
Really? It appears to be, I don't know what, it's a salt shaker with a, I don't even know what that is inside the salt shaker, and a crescent moon of some sort.
Close.
Explain.
It's a spaceship called a Firefly, and it's in a jar.
A spaceship called a Firefly would be in a jar with holes in the top. Okay. Okay. And why would you have that, though?
Because I like the show called Firefly.
There's a show called Firefly. Okay. I seem to be out of my element once again. Was this a television show or a show playing in your head?
It was on television. These people are not all in my head, I hope.
And that was the...
That was the main ship.
Did you follow this show as well?
I didn't follow it when it was on television. I followed it later.
Later when it was not on television?
Yeah, that's true. When it became sort of a cult following after it was canceled.
After one season.
Really? Yeah. So this is it's a small cult following.
Pretty much, yeah.
I've had a cult following me for years, actually. And, and it's very small as well. It's not quite Firefly size. Well, that's interesting. Okay, and your name is?
My name is Leah.
Leah, I'm Sam.
Sam, what are you guys doing these days? What are you up to?
Well, we work at a telephone company in town.
You can't give me the name of the phone company?
Oh, it's TDS.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. What she said.
Yeah. And are you on vacation now? Are you vacationing? Or are you?
Well, actually, we like your show, but we live about four blocks from here.
Okay. Just came for some donuts and coffee and sit through the worst of this?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, nice to meet you guys. I'm here. And, okay, so we got various things here now. Someone said a square that has the word applause on it. Lila from Madison. Lila. You know, why did I say Lila? That was really stupid. Obviously, it's Lila. Did you want to talk a little bit? No, you don't want to talk. Okay. I'm glad I asked. All right. How about this, though? Maddie Miller, do you want to see a picture of my dog on my phone? Maddie? Yeah? Do you still want to show me the picture of the dog on your phone? Okay. We're doing great so far. Everything is just clicking. I love it when everything just clicks and one thing leads to another and we get to do visual things on the radio that no one really wants to see. And all right, and okay. You got your own phone. That's so. You got your. That's your own iPhone.
Yeah.
How did you finagle that?
My mom got a new one, so I got an old one.
That's all it took. Your mom got a new one, and you got the old one.
Yeah, pretty much.
You want to campaign for it for several months at least?
Not really.
Okay. And this is your dog. I don't know if you saw that at home. It's a very cute dog. Your dog's name is
Griffin.
What?
Griffin.
Griffin. Griffin. The what kind of dog is that?
Cavapoo.
The
what-a-poo? A Cavapoo.
Yeah, so it's half?
Cavalier and poodle.
Cavalier and poodle. Cavapoo. Okay. Did you want to add anything to this? I don't mean to leave you out.
She got her phone because I flushed my old one down the toilet.
All right. How did you get a phone?
I got her old phone.
Okay. So it went... This chain of events started when you flushed your phone down the toilet?
Yeah, and then my mom got it.
Did you do it on purpose?
No.
How can you flush a toilet? Everyone looks after they use the toilet. You didn't know your phone was in the toilet at that moment?
It dropped out of my pocket.
I know, but I don't know. I've never heard anyone actually flushing it, you know.
Yeah.
You wanted to get rid of it, didn't you?
No.
All right, so you flushed your phone. So that entitled you to her old phone. Is that it right there that you're holding?
Yeah.
Are you happy with it?
Yeah.
You can always flush it if you don't like it, because then you're entitled to this old iPhone here. Was it iPhone 3 or is it a...
5, iPhone 5.
It's a 5? Her old phone is a 5? What's your new one?
It's the latest 5, which is a 5, like 5S, yeah.
Okay, so you can start this whole chain of events. You could end up with an iPhone 5 if you play your cards right. And what's everyone's name here? Your name is?
Mia.
Mia.
Maddie.
Maddie and?
Julie.
The mom. Isn't that sweet? An iPhone family, one way or another. All right, kids. What did the termites say when you sat down at the bar? Is this worth going for, Jim? Jim Barron's retired math teacher? Okay. I'll make the trip. You tell me it's worth it. You're the math teacher. Let's do the math on this one. What did the termite say when he sat down at the bar? Yes.
Is the bartender here?
Oh, boy. I knew better, too. All right, well, here's Ann in Madison here. She's says, I don't have a question for you. I have a question for John. So that's okay. Ann, where are you? Huh?
I'm right here.
Okay. This is worth it, too, isn't it? Because I'm going to make a trip, step on all these people. And it's nothing personal as far as John goes that could embarrass him. Huh? Okay. Well, then that's worth doing. It's just... Stand up with you. Hi, Ann. How are you?
Hi, I'm okay. How are you? So my friend Amy wants to know why you won't friend her on Facebook.
John, respond.
I think Amy?
Amy Becker?
Yeah,
no,
I thought Cohen. I did. I am friends.
Oh, no, you didn't. I saw her last night, and she mentioned that.
Oh. I thought I was friends with her. Well, I'll rectify that. I can do it right now with my
iPhone
5S.
That'd be awesome. 5S. She'll probably be checking. She's at the farmer's market now, so.
Yeah. How does she know John?
How does she know John, John?
Well, let's not get into that right now.
Well, thank you for that.
Happily married woman, so.
Yeah. Well, now she's even happier that you're going to friend her. That's wonderful. Are you on Facebook?
No. No.
Are you on anything?
No, I'm socially inept.
It doesn't stop people from going on Facebook.
I understand that. That's why I'm off it.
But were you on it at one point?
Never. Never.
Do you have any online presents?
Well, somebody gave me something.
No, I don't mean a present. I mean, do you social network?
Yes, I email. Yeah. And my, granddaughter and my kids are all on Instagram, so I follow that.
You're on Instagram?
Yeah.
You, like, put lewd pictures up on the...
No, I would never do that. No.
Would you do that?
No, I wouldn't do it. I would receive one if someone felt they had to. I
wouldn't even receive one.
No, I wouldn't either. Okay. What?
My granddaughter has a water bottle. You know why it goes everywhere?
Why?
It's potable.
Can you want to sit with the math teacher over there? You guys could have a great time together. Have half a beer each. And yeah, the jokes will be flying. It'll be great. And what is your name?
Howard.
Howard?
Howard, yeah.
Uncle, the one name?
Uncle Howie.
Uncle Howie is here, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Uncle Howie. Nice to see you. Thanks. Yeah, very nice to talk to you. You should Facebook, though. You should Facebook a little more. Okay, we're going to try a round of the What Do You Know quiz. Because that's what we try. We're going to try next, I guess, is the quiz. Before we can do that, we have to know who can and cannot participate in the quiz legally. And to that effect, stand up here if you would. We have, you are?
Cindy.
Cindy, just use the one. Everyone uses one name now. Cindy, Howard, whatever.
Yep.
Where are you from, Cindy?
Living in Verona.
Living in Verona. Okay. Want to take that and get out of your way.
Should I use my sensual radio voice? Or? Okay. The four disclaimers. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Space tourism. Nope, not on bucket list. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful, needless to say. They are not those of the International House of Radio. It's member stations or lackeys. Anyone who say otherwise is itching for a fight.
Thank you, dear. Very well done.
Needless to say.
Did you ever hear a sexy needless to say before? I'm doubting it. Oh, you can have this if you want, just to prove you've been here. All right, let's see the hands of those of you who want to try them at the What Do You Know quiz, a chance to win fabulous prizes simply for being yourself. And you had your hand up first because you've been thinking about this, and you're doing it. You're up for this. Come on down here, and let's just see if you qualify. No one is yet not qualified, but it could happen. You never know. You are?
I'm David.
David, you from around here, David?
From Green Bay.
Green Bay? How are things up there?
They're good. We have this football team up there. They're doing pretty well.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. What are they called?
You know, I don't remember.
The Acme Packers? Yeah, I mean, those guys? Yeah. David, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because I'm here with my wife on her birthday, and she would love to see me make a fool of myself on the radio.
Yes, she would. Okay, come on, David. Someone else gets to make a fool of themselves. I love it. Yeah, have a seat there, David. Yeah. So I read that they're buying up a lot of homes there in Green Bay.
That's true, yeah. They're starting a... Packer District.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you like that idea? I don't like that idea.
You know, I never went to that Kmart that they're tearing down, so it's not...
Oh, the Kmart.
They're taking down the Kmart, yeah.
The Kmart is nostalgic for me. Ellie and I used to go to the first stop was the Kmart.
Sure, know? Yeah.
Get a jersey or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a shocker.
It'll be good, though. I think it'll
yeah, but
know,
all
bring
the guys
a lot of
there,
tourism.
Like 12 and... houses, and you sell the parking in your driveway.
Sure, that's
make
true.
Make some money, and that's not fair.
Yeah, we were just a little too far away to sell parking, so I was always kind of jealous of that.
And David, right?
Yep, that's right.
What do you do these days? What are you up to?
I'm a craft beer manager for a distributorship in the Fox Valley.
Oh, is that? What craft beer would that be then?
Well, we carry a bunch of good Madison brands like Capital, Ale Asylum. We have a big portfolio.
Oh, I see. So you release
Yeah, we have Hinterland, Stone Arch, Tyrannina. We have a lot of beer.
Are you kind of a beer expert? Ben?
I like to think so. I did a lot of research.
What else do you like to think? Do you like to think a lot of different things, or do you just this thing?
Mostly about beer.
About beer?
Yeah.
Where did you get your first interest in beer? How did you?
I lived out in the Northwest in the state of Washington. I was in the Army and started drinking a lot of craft beer.
You did?
Yeah.
While on duty?
No.
Okay. And is that
not that the government knows.
Okay. Is craft beer, did it sort of originate in the Northwest? Is that what you're telling me here?
Well, it started in California.
Yeah.
But at the time, this was back in about 99, and there was a lot more out there than there was here.
Yeah. What makes a beer a craft beer as opposed to a beer?
That's quite a can of worms. There's even argument among craft brewers right now about what qualifies.
Yeah.
But mainly they say, you know, the focus on the product is quality over profitability. And
so you don't make any money selling craft beer, is that what you're saying?
Not much, no.
Okay. That's all you had to say. It makes perfect sense to me. Okay, David, someone out there plays along with you. You have a general knowledge base, I'm sure.
I think so.
Yeah?
All the questions are about beer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All about beers and brewing and all that sort of distilling. We're getting into distilling a little bit. And someone out there plays along with you. And how does that work exactly, Sarah Dix?
If somebody at home wants to play the quiz, they pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669 and answer a qualifying question of your choice.
You know a lot about craft beer, don't you?
No, I know nothing about beer, actually.
Oh. Okay.
Don't drink it.
You don't drink it, but you know a lot about it, don't you? Or is that wine?
It comes in bottles or growlers, right? Or cans sometimes. No, okay. Not in cans.
I don't know. Craft cans. Comes a little craft cans. All right, so someone out there plays like that. I have to ask the question then, and then they answer that? Okay.
Yeah, they have to get the question right.
I will get the question.
The answer right,
all right
to the question.
Here the question is, who is the beast, and what does it want from us? There's something coming called the beast. I want to know what that is. It's a current event. And it's headed our way. I want to know what that is. If you know, give us a call here at that number you heard. And here's Phil, who's on the line already from Powell, Ohio. Hey, Phil, how are you?
Hi, I'm all right. How are you guys?
You getting married today, Phil, by any chance?
Oh, far, far from it.
Okay. That's not so bad either, really.
Yeah.
You know who the beast,
I don't mind.
What the beast is, Phil? That's headed our way?
The beast.
Yeah, the
I
beast.
Do not.
The beast.
Far, far away, you say?
Far, far away. Getting nearer, though.
Some sort of a space object hurtling towards Earth.
Can we accept a space object hurtling towards Earth?
Sure.
Yeah. She's very amenable to that. Yes, it's an asteroid headed our way. 1,100 foot wide is what it is.
Hey, that works.
Yeah, it's dangerously close. Okay, all right, Phil. You know what? They're supposed to be here on Saturday or Sunday, I guess. Sunday, I think. All right, Phil. So what's new in Powell, Ohio there? What are you up to these days?
Well, not much today. I'm watching tennis, French Open ladies finals on. I'll do some golfing a little bit later.
Yeah. So you're pretty athletic in all respects. Actually watching it and doing it, both.
Well, you can call golf an athletic activity. That's fine with me.
Or it's a drinking activity for a lot of people, too, as well. But
yeah,
crossover.
Not for me,
it's a crossover activity.
Sure, however you want to do it.
Okay. Phil, this is David. David, Phil.
Hey, Phil, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm a Packers fan, too. It's hard to root for the Browns or Bengals, so I like the Packers.
We hear that, Phil.
Yeah.
Way to be. Okay, Phil and David, you are a team, so you collaborate on all these questions and answers, and we have various categories, don't we, Sarah?
We do, and they are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay. Phil, you take the first one. What would you like?
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends. How do lab mice feel about men? Do they A, love them, B, hate them, or C, it's complicated? Lab mice.
Well, if they knew what the men were probably going to do to them, I'd say hate, but they probably don't know before something happens. I'd go in the middle.
Hate them?
You think it's hate
them?
No.
That's in the middle.
That's in the middle?
Love,
between
hate,
love
complicated.
And hate.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Yeah, but come on, we're talking mice here. How complicated can it be for a mouse?
Phil, I don't think mice are that complicated.
No.
All right. Well.
Love them, hate them, it's complicated.
What do you think, Phil? Should we go with hate them?
Hate them. Sure.
Okay, let's go with that. Hate them is good. They fear them, so I guess they're, I don't know if a mouse can hate, but we're going to accept that, aren't we? Yes, they can smell them coming. And they fear because they, and they can smell something, the pheromones or something, and they start twitching immediately.
Makes sense to me.
I know the feeling.
Are you seeing men?
Yes, you, you start twitching when men come near?
Yeah.
I've seen you do that, actually.
Not in a positive way. That's one right and zero wrong.
All right, that's good. We're off on the right foot here, and then what's left?
What's left? Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school or science.
Let's do things you should have learned in school.
Okay. First bad word from baby. Is it poop, poopy, or an FCC-regulated expletive? First bad word. You know, when they first say their first bad word. Yeah. You know, kids always get to that point where they're...
I don't know. I have a five-month-old daughter, and she hears the word poop a lot.
Yeah.
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 A lot of our life is about poop.
Yeah. Does she say poop yet?
Well, not yet. But I could see that being her first word.
Head in that direction.
One day. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Phil, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, poop's one syllable, so I think I picked that over poopy. But there are other one-syllable words that the FCC would bleep out, too.
Yeah. They get to those eventually, at least. By...
Yeah. I'm okay with poop if you are.
I like poop.
Yeah. Poop or poopy, either one actually would work. We'll accept them both.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
Usually where they start, and then by two, they go on to other concepts. All right.
That's two right and zero wrong.
Okay, very good.
And the categories remaining are current events, people, places, or science.
All right. Back to you, Phil.
Places.
Places, okay. What's your link time out there, Phil? When you got to be there?
Oh, I got a while yet. I'm good.
You're good? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Really, though, only half, two-thirds, or three-fourths of the people of Illinois would move out. According to this survey of people of Illinois, I guess. Half, two-thirds, or three-fourths of the people who live in Illinois say they would move out if they could.
Right. Well, a lot of them live in Chicago. I know people probably either love or hate Chicago who are there. I don't know. I'll say half. I don't know.
Well, love it or hate it kind of sounds like half.
Half? Yeah, half, according to this survey, anyhow. It was number one in people who wanted to leave their state. I don't know why. They seem pretty nice to me when you go down there. It's when they come to our state that I don't love it. Then they change all of a sudden.
That's
like
three
Jekyll
right.
Jekyll and Hyde. Oh, they won. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did.
However,
should you
what?
Choose to risk one more question, you might win the motherlode.
Whoa.
Many, many more prizes.
Whoa. A lot of prizes.
I have a good feeling. Let's go for it.
You like it, Phil? You want to go for it?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it.
All right. A little encouragement, please. Not that easy. It's a lot of pressure.
The categories left are current events, people, or science.
All right, this is for all the money. David?
Let's do science.
Okay, let's do science. Firstborn children, are they more hygienic, conservative, or smarter by their own account?
Phil, I kind of like smarter. What do you think?
Child. I'm a firstborn child. I'm all three.
Yeah. I hear you, Phil.
Yeah. Maybe it is an all of the above answer. Probably not, though.
You're hygienic, are you?
You know, we're both firstborn, and we're both pretty smart.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
pretty hygienic, too.
Yeah. Conservative, I think, means politically conservative. Tend to be more politically conservative.
Mm. We're all over the place, aren't we?
We're a little all over the map here.
All right, so what do you think?
Smarter?
I don't know, Phil. I like smarter.
You like smarter? Smarter by their own account. Can't go wrong with that. Okay, we'll accept that.
Yeah. All right.
I never heard one said that he was stupider than his younger brother. Okay.
David,
you can't lose on this show.
From Pangea to God Particle, you'll discover the universe in Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know from source books. And then whet your appetite with Kurt Timmermeister's Growing a Feast, The Chronicle of a Farm-to-Table Meal from W.W. Norton. Continue with Michelle Wildgen's Bread and Butter from Doubleday, Anna Quindlen's Still Life with Breadcrumbs from Random House, Tim Burkhead's The Red Canary from Bloomsbury, and finish with Sweet Desserts from Peoria, Illinois by Peoria Area Restaurants and Citizens from the Peoria Historical Society. Hmm. Phil, start your mornings like the What Do You Know audience does with Stephen Brew's Breakfast Blend, and settle back in the afternoons with Rich and Smooth Costa Rican Terrasu from Madison Stephen Brew Coffee, which is coffee done right. And then while away your evening playing the game Captain Hook played, called the Captain's Mistress Game from the Duluth Trading Company, add some high culture background music with a CD of the Los Angeles Philharmonic playing Gershwin, Barber, and Copland, and fill up your cornucopia of prizes with historic What Do You Know memorabilia, including vintage What Do You Know temporary tattoos, the rare and priceless What Do You Know wooden nickel, and a host of Michael Feldman stickers. Congratulations to you both.
All right.
You really cleaned up.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Phil. It was good working with you.
David, nice job. Phil, hang on for a second. Make sure you get that stuff. Thanks for playing, man. Great job.
Thank you.
Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, it's the host of the WTF podcast, Mark Maron. Thanks for the memos and more of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who pretty much has a driverless car, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. I'm a schlump when I drive. That's why it looks like no one driving my car. So, like a low rider, like a Jewish low rider. You call him a schlump. A schlump rider. They think I'm Google out there, but I'm not. Well, you know, each week at this time we read all the news that is, followed by the memos. We do a little thing here called This Is All the News That Is, because there are actually real things that happen, mostly around here. Not too much this week. But this happened in Madison, so this is pretty much it. Rolled up jacket caught in wheel leads to motorcycle crash in Madison. It's a humorous crash story. Because a rolled up jacket entangled in a motorcycle wheel led to a crash in Madison's Beltline Highway on Friday. The driver, a 45-year-old Madison man, and the passenger, a 28-year-old Madison woman, had been drinking at a local tavern. Since the motorcycle had two sets of foot pegs but no second seat, the operator rolled up his jacket for his female passenger to sit on, Lieutenant Eric Tip Tripke said in the incident report, which was categorized as intoxicated/impaired driver. About 1:55 a.m. on the Beltline between Midvale and South Whitney, the jacket apparently got caught in the rear wheel. So where was she at this point? Since she was on the jacket before, anyhow. The motorcycle seized, the driver lost control, and the cycle crashed off the highway. The driver and passenger were transported to a hospital for non-life-threatening injuries, Tripke said. The Madison Police Department has not yet released information on whether it will pursue charges against the driver of the motorcycle. First of all, what a 45-year-old man, what is he doing with a 28-year-old woman? Drinking with her, rolling up his coat for her. So, but that's all there is around here, so they're okay. That's the good news. Now, actual memos sent in by actual listeners, so that actual listeners shall not perish from the earth. This is a memo here. It's brief, but it's of some interest. This was sent to a group at the office there. I guess it went out to everybody. It reads as follows. I have a large party pan filled with spaghetti and meat sauce. This was frozen for a month, and when we defrosted it, the texture was mushy and tasted gamey. I would highly advise against a human eating this, as I can no longer vouch for its quality and human safety, but this would make several dogs happy for a week. Must be picked up ASAP. Thank you so much for that memo. We need more of this kind of generosity. And where can they send those memos? And
they can send memos to whatdoyouknow@ WPR.org. With the subject line memos, or they can go to notmuch.com and post it there.
Cool. Oh, Mark is on. Okay, that's cool. Mark Maron is joining us right now. His new book is called Attempting Normal. Mark Maron, he's got a new show on IFC called Maron. And, of course, his podcast has been on for many years and probably one of the most popular podcasts in the nation. And he's joining us right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Mark. How are you this morning?
Very well, Michael. How are you, sir?
I'm good. You worked last night, right? You must be pretty tired.
I guess I'm tired. I did a few sets at the Comedy Store, but... Yeah, you're right. I am tired. Should I go back to sleep, or you want to do this?
I don't know. Would you rather go in your garage and do this? You'd probably feel more comfortable if you.
I'm in my garage. Oh. I'm sitting here naked.
Great. You're consistent. I'll say that for you. That's amazing. So
you're the only person that thinks that. I appreciate that.
No, you're consistently you. I mean, that's an amazing quality. But you know this.
Oh,
new...
I thought you meant I was consistently consistent. Yeah, I am consistently me, and that's not always consistent.
No, inconsistently consistent. This new show, and your show is great, by the way. I love the IFC show. It's fantastic. But, it has had the unintended consequence of making you endearing.
Yeah, I know. It's a painful thing for all of us.
Yeah.
And we're just trying to get through it.
Yeah. Did you expect that to happen? I mean, this last episode with Boomer, it brought out all sorts of feelings about you that I didn't know I had for you.
It became tricky to, after the first season of Maron, when I had not really done any acting in a big way or writing in a big way or producing television, so I was very green and just trying to get the hang of things. And I think we made some choices this year about story and about the character of me on the show, what parts of me were we going to kind of sort of work with. But, Michael, I'm not a bad guy. You know that, right?
Yes, I know, and you keep trying to convince yourself of that, I guess, more than anyone.
Well, I just wanted to convince America that I was endearing while I still struggled with it alone.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's sort of a new aspect. Does it at all change your affect in how you work? So once people start to find you so, they're charmed by you or they're sympathetic to you, it sort of puts a different edge on things.
Yeah, well, not unlike, my two ex-wives and many girlfriends. That'll wear thin after a while. They'll see the real me. So.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about the show is you get to make Sally Kellerman your mom. I think that's an amazing thing right there.
It is. It was a thrill to work with her, and I was so happy that she was able to do it. And she had a very good time being my mother. I think she shares a lot of the same emotional disposition character traits as my mother. And my mother was actually happy that Sally played her. My mother now wants to meet Sally. She wants to spend time with Sally. And I'm going to try to arrange that, but I don't think it would be good for anybody.
Yeah. Did you run it past your mother before you cast her?
I'm not known for running things past people. I throw under the bus. That's gotten me into some trouble. I told my mother. I think I told both of them who was playing them, and the casting was pretty true to both of them in a way. Though I think that Judd Hirsch, arguably was a better father than my father.
Ah, okay.
To me.
Your upbringing is very. He was a doctor, but he was a military man as well. Is that your dad?
He was a military man for 2 years, so yeah. I don't know if that,
counts.
I don't know if we can say he was a career military man, but he was in the Air Force for a couple of years, and he took the family to Alaska, where he was stationed for a couple of years. So I have, vague memories of the tundra, and then we moved to New Mexico. So, yeah, he was an orthopedic surgeon in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah. So in your formative years, you were in Alaska, or are you still in Albuquerque during whatever formative years are?
Most of the problems happened in Albuquerque, and that developed who I am now. I was in Albuquerque from third grade through high school, and then I went to Boston.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, was there an incident or a series of incidents or that sort of – you have a rather unique voice. I mean, you're full of self-doubt and maybe self-loathing, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't even know how well this is going.
No, this is not going. But – you're able to find, when you mentioned you were doing comedy one time early on, and you did a whole thing about the AIDS and the end of the world, and a guy came up afterwards and said, "Why comedy?" I mean, that's sort of a question, isn't it? I mean, it was comedy a way of getting out of some of these feelings, or why comedy?
That is a good question. question. That was a powerful moment that guy did that. It's a horrible question.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, and I still don't know how to answer it. I think that that to me, when I saw comics when I was a kid, that there seemed to be a truth there. These guys, comedians, were able to have a point of view. They were able to have a handle on the world. They were able to disarm things. They just seemed to really have a sense of who they were. And I think more than anything else, through most of my formative years as a comic, I was really trying to, you know, kind of figure out who I was and be that guy. Mm-hmm. And it took about 25 years for that to happen. But that's really why I was in it. And it was just to have my own space, to have my own voice, to be seen, and to work through some stuff. That was always the agenda. It was never to be an entertainer, per se, but I thought comics were something more than entertainers, at least in my perception. And that's really what I think drove me when I look at my career.
Yeah. And working with Sam Kinison, was that a big... part of it, or at least affected?
Yeah, that guy, yeah, no, that was a big part of the, I don't know that was a good time. I did a lot of cocaine. I was awake a lot, and you know, I talked for hours about things that I have no recollection of, but they were very important at the time. That period with Sam was pretty brutal, and it kind of blew my mind, but I definitely learned some things about Sam, because when you do cocaine with a guy that's a star, you're going to hear a lot about that guy from that guy.
Right.
But yeah, it was a formative time in that I never wanted to go back there. I kind of lost my mind, and it's very interesting when you lose your mind, because you don't really know you're losing it at first, because you're pretty sure you're just enlightened. You know, when you hear voices in your head, it's never one, it's always many, and you spend a lot of time trying to get them to pick a leader. So, you know, it took a while to shake that period of time, but I do think that it was an important time, because he was sort of an important comic. I think it's a little short shrift, because I think he was wrong-minded on a lot of things, but nobody really took it out as far as Sam. So it was sort of an amazing thing to try to chase that and push it out that far, and it took me about 20 years to reel it back in.
Yeah. In doing which, I mean, all comics sort of turn themselves inside out in front of audiences. But I think no one is probably as much as you.
I think that's probably true. But I don't really know how to do it another way. You know, sometimes when I'm on stage, you know, I'll tell the audience. I'll say, look, you know, I'm not always funny, but I think I'm always pretty compelling. And I know that, you know, on a good night, that some people will leave the show saying, you know, that guy was hilarious. And other people will leave saying, you know, I hope he's okay, that guy.
Yeah.
He seems to be in trouble of some kind, and I hope he works it through. I kind of feel like waiting after to see if he needs a hug. He's in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah.
But it's not, that's not really true. It's an exaggeration. I mean, I do put myself out there, but it took a long time to really be okay with it and to not just push it on people and to, you know where the funny is. I think I spent a lot of years just putting myself out there and being a little more shocking and a little more needy and a little more aggressive. So I think a lot of the laughter I used to get when I was a more angry man was just discomfort. And I think now I've got a handle on it. You know, I know who I am. I've landed in myself. And I think I'm the best comic I've been ever right now.
Mm-hmm. What I like, actually, are not so much the fundamental truths that might come out of it, but I like the little things. I like when you're talking about hummingbirds.
Yeah.
They're actually very mean animals and ready to suck your ocular jelly, I think is what you said, out of your eyes.
They are horrible little things, but they're so cute. I think that maybe I identify with them. That line that they ride between adorable and horrifying is something I aspire to.
Yeah, and that just came about because you wanted something to do, and so you put out hummingbird feeders.
Yeah, no, I still do it. I got that feeder out front, and I'm pretty diligent about it. Yeah, that was a story about my, you know, one of them, you know, had, I heard that thump on the window that can only mean, you know, one thing, that, you know, a dumb bird has thought it could come in the house. And I go outside, and there's this hummingbird, and it's down. It looks injured. There's a problem. And, you know, I don't know what you do in that situation. You know, like, is there a group that deals with this? Is there an emergency number for hummingbirds? Can someone come take care of it? So I didn't think that. But I didn't know what to do with an injured hummingbird. But at that time, my first thought was like, you know, I could just let my cat deal with it, you know, because, you know, that seems to be a natural way to do things. I don't know if it's the right thing to do as a human, but this stuff happens in the wild all the time. So I really fought with that for a while because LaFonda, my cat, would have had a wonderful time with that dying bird. And you know, ultimately, I think I made the right decision. I just, you know, as I was struggling with the decision, I went out and it flew off. So I guess it was just stunned and perhaps a little bit embarrassed. I was glad that it did what it did because I just didn't know where I was going to go with it. I think it was just sort of sitting it out. It probably felt some other birds saw it and that, you know, there's probably a lot of pressure in that community to be impressive and keep those wings going. So he was probably just waiting for them to go away so he could, you know, fly off quietly. And that worked out for everybody.
Yeah. And it's sort of the same thing with the cats themselves. I mean, you're not really a cat person. You don't put...
No, I'm a my cat person. I don't really care about your cat.
Yeah. Anybody else's cat. And you take
you
him...
Do?
What?
I
don't have a cat.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just saying, one's cat.
You were just saying that? Yeah. I mean, I like my cats, and I have a couple... I had a couple cats outside. Well, you know that the last Marin this week was about Boomer. Boomer, yeah. He seems to be gone, but, you know, my hope is that he's living down the road a bit with a pleasant Mexican family that gives him, you know, wet food as opposed to the dry food that I was giving him. And, you know, that's my dream for Boomer. Or perhaps he's on a heroic journey with a dog that can talk and some other animals.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. You know, and I have the two in the house that I kept.
That was
early.
A great episode. I loved everything about that. I love the fact about, you know, you were talking about the woman who lost her cat and about that cartoon where all the animals formed a group and found happiness together.
Yeah, the amazing journey, right?
The amazing journey, yeah. I love that part of it. And is that Shapiro? Is that Rick Shapiro?
Rick Shapiro.
Yeah, he was...
The amazing Rick Shapiro.
Oh, God. He was so good.
I've known him so long. You know, yeah. Rick is quite a character, and he's had quite a history in comedy. And you know, we go back about 20 or 25 years to the Lower East Side in New York, and he was... He's a force in nature, that guy, and he's come upon some hard times physically, and I think really that was he was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's, I believe, and it took a long time for them to figure out what it was, and he was already a pretty shaky guy, you know, and you know he's always full of the juice and like a little bit, you know, amped up all the time, but he's really an inspired comedian and actor, and I think that was really the first role that you know he's done since they kind of leveled off on a medication that was working for him, and it was just a thrill to be able to give him the opportunity because he's such a vital presence, you know, on screen and on stage. And I was, you know, I always had him in mind for the part, and I was just happy he was able to do it.
Yeah, that was absolutely amazing with the gun and shooting the crows and taking you to where where you could see the entire Los Angeles from that
hill. He's really something else. I mean, you really got to... Yeah, look into Rick Shapiro. You know, he was on the Louis C.K.'s first show on HBO, Lucky Louie, as I think the brother-in-law. And he did a lot of Louis's early movies too. He was around New York when we were all in New York, and he was just this. There's nobody like Rick, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I thought that was terrific. And once again, it was so endearing to see you going through all this anguish over your cat and so forth. And between your cat and your lost girlfriend, those two things. The girlfriend also ran off.
You know, Michael, I'm inside a very sensitive, broken man. I mean, I don't. You're making it sound like it's a miracle that you can get people to like you at all.
No. I think it's not at all. I mean, it sort of dawns on you, and actually, we see you going through your anguish, you know.
I got angry this morning because apparently somebody in that room where you are right now was under the misconception that I was going to be there in person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he decided to go ahead and throw a tweet up, and, you know, I'll read it to you. I paid $10 to see you, and you aren't even here, hack. So...
Yeah, this has happened before, you know.
To make this guy feel like he didn't waste his money, I'd like to say, Connor... Go screw yourself.
Connor, are you here, or did you not even... Where is Connor? Hey, man. Sorry, man. I'm sorry. He's not. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Connor.
Did that make the $10 worth it, Connor? Huh? Was that worth it?
Yes. Cool. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, he's good with that.
Right, tell him he owes me $10.
We have that problem. We're kind of low budget. We're in Madison. You don't get a lot of cross traffic of stars coming through here. You know, that sort of thing.
Well, you could have flown me out, Michael. I would have come.
Yeah. We couldn't, though. We don't have the money to do that. You have to fly yourself out here, and that's asking. You've been in Madison, I know, for your cancer scare. Was in a hotel.
Oh,
in
yeah,
Madison,
that was
Wisconsin.
Yeah, that happened there. Yeah, when I was mouth cancer thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a long weekend. It worked out okay. I'm okay. I'm talking. Everything's fine.
Yeah. It was really just a licorice that discolored some cancer.
Yeah, there's an episode coming up of Marin based on that, too. Actually.
You don't throw anything away. That's what I love about you.
Well, I mean, what else am I going to do? You know, it's like either, you know, use my life or use my imagination, which seems exhausting.
Yeah. And going back to the book, you know, what I also, among other things I love, that cooking at Thanksgiving, the fact that you actually do this, right? You cook a meal, a Thanksgiving meal for your mother in Florida every Thanksgiving. Is that true?
I wouldn't say it's for her because she doesn't eat like a human. But
yeah,
it's for the people that she invites. Yeah, I have some family and some extended family and then, you know, hangers-on that come just because I do a pretty good job. So, you know, on any given Thanksgiving, it can be anywhere from like 18 to 25 people. And I go cook. In my mother, who, you know, I like to say, I don't want to say that she's anorexic. I like to say that her job in life is to maintain a weight of 116 pounds. That's her lifelong job. And so I've got to cook in this kitchen that, you know, she's afraid to have butter in the refrigerator. I mean, a pint of ice cream will not last the night in her house because she'll go down in the middle of the night and eat three spoonfuls of it and then throw the rest down the garbage disposal. That's her dieting tip. Uh-huh. When in doubt, use the garbage disposal.
Yeah.
So going down there to cook for everybody is always a task. But, but you know, we figured it out. She's gotten better over time. She'll allow, you know, bread and ice cream. And sour cream is very frightening to her. But you know, we've worked it out that she can allow that stuff in the fridge for a couple of days. But leftovers don't last long, especially if they have fat or sugar in them. She feeds the garbage disposal, and it's kind of heartbreaking. But, yeah, that was a good moment in that story where, yeah, I don't know if I can capture it for the audience there, but there was one Thanksgiving where the stuffing that I make is, I'm pretty proud of it. It's a very impressive recipe. People come from miles around to eat it. And I was baking it in the, I don't cook it in the bird because that's for amateurs, because you're going to get a crappy turkey if you do the stuffing in the bird. Just know that, all right? You're going to overcook it. So I cook it outside the bird, and we were using the condo next door to hers in Florida where I was cooking the stuffing. And it had gone too long, and I burnt the top. And I lost my mind. I wanted to aggressively throw out the entire dinner. I wanted people to go home. And it was not a pleasant moment for anybody. So my mother, in that moment, says, just scrape off the top. And I'm like, you don't know what's happening here. My life is ruined. My reputation is hinging on this stuffing. And I don't know if I can go on. So I bring the stuffing in where all the people are, and the presentation, of course, it's sad because everyone's like, it'll be fine, and, you know, and I'm just devastated, you know, close to suicide, I think. And scraped off the black part, and everybody ate the stuffing and said, no, you can't even tell. What else are they going to say, Michael? You know, what else are they going to say? And then my mother just sat there alone, you know, she was standing by the sink eating the burnt part. And she said, you know, Mark, the burnt top is really the best part. And this is a woman that doesn't eat. And I thought, well, you know, she's making an attempt. And at that moment, I loved my mother.
Yeah. Another part of the book that I really liked, also speaking of little things, with the Levi's and the Red Wings. Levi's are very important to a young boy growing up, and you get very fond of them, and they're attached to you almost literally after a period of time. But it's impossible to recreate that, perhaps, as an adult, that feeling with your pants.
I don't know what's happened to pants. I don't know what they've done to them, Michael. In my recollection, I think I had a pair of Levi's that lasted me from fifth grade through high school. But maybe I'm wrong. But it seems like, you know, there's a couple of things that happen in the culture we live in is that people don't feel that they need to break in their own pants. They will buy pants that, you know, either someone else has broken in or perhaps a machine. I don't know. And it's very hard as a grown man to find pants that fit properly. They don't seem to go up high enough anymore. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
But that story was like, Red Wings, isn't that also out there by you?
It's in Minnesota, isn't it? Red Wing, yeah.
Oh, it's in Minnesota, not Wisconsin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I get this thing where, like, I get very loyal to shoes and pants. Like, I have this thing where I really need to make things my own, and I want to take the time to do that. So, you know, if I commit to a pair of pants, I'm going to wear them, you know, almost every day. And they don't the thing that they don't have the kind of Levi's that we grew up with, but now they introduce this kind of Levi's that supposedly, you know, the kind that, you know, you can grow with and that you can break in on your own. And then I read this article that the way to do that is you got to put them on and then you got to sit in a bathtub with them and you never wash them. And then you get out of the bathtub so they form to your body and then they're going to be the best pants you ever had. So cut to, I'm in a bathtub wearing pants. and then I get out of the bathtub after I sit in there and I walk around with wet pants for like 4 hours. Thinking that, well, this is gonna be the best pair of pants I ever had, and they weren't, Michael. They were not the best pants I ever had.
Yeah. And did you wash
them?
Did you wash them?
Well, after a while, you know, that whole idea of not washing your pants, it's like, you know, it doesn't seem sanitary, really.
No.
So
it's not,
you know,
it's not.
I went for a while, but it didn't seem to be making a difference. And then I was told, like, no, that's ridiculous. What kind of idiot doesn't wash your pants? I'm like, but the guy on the internet said, it's like, what guy? You know, you're right. I eventually got some better pants, some salvaged denim pants that I committed to. But if you wash them in cold and line dry them, you know, it'll be all right.
Yeah. And then the other thing about stealing from Whole Foods, I thought, justifying stealing from Whole Foods, I thought that was really an advance for mankind, almost.
Yeah, screw them. I mean, like, I don't even know why I feel that way. It's because, like, there's something insulting about the prices they charge, and there seems to be something righteous about it, the attitude of people that shop there, you know, me being one of them occasionally out of necessity if I need certain things, but I'm not proud of it. And I know that people like working there, and I think there's something evil about the place. The guy who's the CEO, he doesn't seem right-minded about healthcare and other things, and he seems sort of elitist. And I, you know, some part of me that thinks that everybody should be able to afford good food, and I think that he thinks that, well, you know, if you can't afford good food, then maybe you don't deserve to live. I'm paraphrasing, but you know, I there was this moment when I was in New York and I'd gone to Trader Joe's, which also has problems, but you know, you do what you can. The vegetables there are not great, but I needed stevia because that's what I use to sweeten things because I am my mother's son I am frightened of sugar sometimes. So I go to Trader Joe's to get the pure stevia because I need the good stuff. And they don't have it. So then I go down the street to Whole Foods in Union Square in New York, and it's just crazy. So I go, I find the stevia I want, like $9, and I'm like, this should be much cheaper than this.
What is stevia? Do you know actually what it is?
Does anybody? I mean, you know, it's. I think it's from. It's a sweetener. It's a very sweet, very sweet sweetener that has no calories, and it comes from a root of some kind.
A root.
You know, I could look it up. Do you want me to look it up?
No, that's okay. Later.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a artificial sweetener that comes from something natural, so that they cancel each other out. It's better than NutraSweet or aspartame, which I think, you know, some people believe, you know, causes you to lose your mind. So, anyways, this is a lot more information than I planned to have. I would have done some research. But let's move on. So, I'm at Whole Foods, and there's horrendous lines. And at the Whole Foods in New York, they actually have the lines with colors. That each line is assigned a color. So I'm looking at these lines. I'm like, these people are rodents, and they don't even know that they're not special because they shop at Whole Foods. Look what Whole Foods has done to them. It's corralled them into these colored coded lines where and at that moment, I felt that I was completely justified to just leave with the stevia because Whole Foods was a horrible, evil influence on everybody, and nobody knew it. And I think in retrospect, I just didn't want to wait online. So I take the CV and I'm like, well, look, you know, you don't want to get in trouble for this, so why don't you just walk out holding it up? Just walk out with it in your hand proudly, and if nobody stops you, then you deserve to have it. But it was almost like it was almost my hand was in the air like a fist of rage. So I was able to justify that as a revolutionary moment. Like, I'm leaving with this stevia because this, you're wrong, all of you. And I walked out just holding it up. And also the thought was that if someone goes, did you pay for that? I could go like, oh, I didn't. And they just think I'm crazy. And I go back and pay for it, like, because I'd just be holding it up. So I walked out and I held it up as I walked out, and then I stood out in front of Whole Foods in New York City in Union Square, holding up stevia, almost baiting anybody to stop me from taking it, and then no one did, and I'm like, well, you know, snooze you lose, and I walked off with it, and I justified it as a political act.
I love it. While not encouraging others to do the same, because then it would be a movement of some sort.
Yeah, I don't want that responsibility, but, you know, it's fun. Yeah. There's a thrill to shoplifting. It's a crime for a reason.
Steal the stevia has a ring to it. And, you know, also another, it's a small thing really, but this idea for Googleheimers, I think, is really a great idea.
No.
It's an amazing way of tapping this resource that remains untapped of older people's take on things, or recollections of things.
Yeah, that idea was an impulsive, improvised idea initially, where, you know, I'd spent some time in Florida, and there are these huge retirement communities of elderly people that that I don't know if they have a lot to do, but they seem to be amazing resources of information, of historical information. So my idea was that, you know, you create a search engine that was really, the engine itself was just these retirement communities. And like, you do a search on something, and then like a light would go on in some elderly man's apartment, and he would go to his computer, and you'd be maybe researching the Kennedy assassination, and so a light would go on in like, you know, some old man's apartment, and he'd go to his computer, and he'd be like, oh yeah, the Kennedy assassination. And then so the information that you would get on the search would be like, that was a bad day. We were very sad. We had cheesecake earlier, which didn't sit well with my wife. And then you use that in your research paper. It was, you know, it's a weird idea.
Oh, I think it's wonderful, because I feel like I'm entering that point now, because I find myself talking to college kids. It's a college town, about the '60s and stuff and all the things we went through, you know, in those years. And so I feel almost like I could be one of those Googleheimer resources. You know, a light could go off.
Yeah, I mean, you are, I'm sure. You know,
yeah,
it's
pretty much.
Yeah, it's strange as things, you know, it's hard for me to tell as we get older whether or not, you know, this stuff that we all live through is actually, you know, losing its relevance to younger people, or that we are irrelevant. It's very difficult to sort of see the difference between aging and sort of what is an astute cultural criticism. Do people not care about context anymore? I mean, my biggest fear is that we'll get to a point where a high school student will say, like, oh yeah, I know who Hitler is. He's the guy with that mustache.
Right.
You know, so that's a scary possibility, that there's no context, but, you know, fleeting images on the computer that have no impact at all.
Right. Well, you get to the point.
I'm sorry to make it dark and sad. But,
No. It's you get the point where actually no one gets any of your references anymore, because they're not their references. You know, so you have to stop and sort of footnote things as you're saying them.
Yeah. You can't say, "Do you dig it, kids?" I'm sorry, Michael.
So tempting normal. Now, It sort of is what you do, isn't it? Do you really aspire towards normalcy? Because it would ruin your act, for one thing.
Well, you know, it's like people always ask me, it's like, what is normal, man? There's no normal. What are you judging yourself against? And the answer to that is everyone else. So, I don't know if I'm attempting normal, but I think, like I said earlier, it was just, you know, there has to be a point where, you know, I can have a little bit of peace of mind. Mm. You know what I mean? But But I do feel a little better than I used to. I'm not as angry as I used to be. But I don't think it's normalcy, but I would like to, you know, function on a day-to-day basis without a tremendous amount of dread and panic. I don't think that's asking for too much.
Yeah.
And I sort of think, I felt like I had a window there for a little while where it seemed to go away. Like, because I think as a comedian and as a creative person, you know, what I was striving for, I don't think was ever to make a living, but it was to be relevant somehow, to have some impact and to share something. You want to hope that your creativity will lead to that. And I think that once the podcast sort of took off, that, you know, that I felt that whatever part of myself I was looking for on stage sort of filled itself in, and I was sitting with some genuine self-esteem for the first time, and it was uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable.
What I love about your interviews and stuff, and you get all these great people, you've talked to everyone that you didn't want to talk to, but they always end up being about you.
I was in trouble at the beginning, and I needed help, and I needed important people to help me. I think that the origin of the show is definitely that I didn't know what I wanted to do with the show, but I wanted to talk to other people about me. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having major celebrities and stars into your garage to help you. Right. It's awkward for them.
No, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know, as someone who does interviews and stuff myself, you always think, well, my idea is not, it's not about me, it's about the person trying to bring them out. But yours is sort of the opposite of that, and I think it's terrific, actually.
Well, thank God it evolved, because that got a little weird for everybody. But, you know, now, but I think the part of it that works, because I don't really see myself as an interviewer. I see myself as a guy who talks to people, because, you know, I'm not that meticulous with preparation. And really what I'm seeking in any one of these talks is to really connect with this person on an emotional level. You know, even if I don't know them, I have an idea of who they are. And that's really my agenda in my heart is, like, you know, I just need to, you know, connect with this guy or this woman. And, at the beginning, it was a little more needy. And now it's evolved into something else. I have found what I think I had as a younger person, this, you know, the ability to be moved and compelled by someone else's story. At some point during the journey of WTF, I became an empathetic listener, which I think I'd lost some of that because of my cynicism and my own problems. But it seems to have returned in almost like a childlike way. And to talk to people with interesting lives and compelling stories, as you know, is very rewarding, because there's not, you know, if I'm sitting in my room and, you know, like the other, who did I have on the other day? Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top is sitting in my garage. And, you know, it's mind-blowing to me. And he's just telling me stories about opening for Jimi Hendrix. And, it's crazy that, my garage is not a nice place, really. And, I mean, it's nice, cozy. It's not really a car garage. It's like all my books. My entire life is in my garage. Yeah. All the artifacts from my life is in here. So when people come in here, they are literally sitting in my head. To have these people in here and to have them sort of, you know, disarmed by that and not really realize they're on the mics and actually have these human interactions is so thrilling for me, still, it still is, and I've done 500 of these things, and I just love it.
That's great, but I do like it when you tell someone to get out of your garage. I think that's quite a thing to say.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes it's time to go. I don't think I've said that angrily to anybody, but there have been moments where people have lingered and it's uncomfortable. You know, Conan lingered a bit, and I've done Conan's show for a long time. He's had me on as a comic since the beginning of the show, and then when he came over to the garage for the first time, it was really the first conversation we ever had. But we've had this weird 15-year relationship, on camera, on and off, and I never talked to the guy. And there was just that moment, because that was sort of early on, where we finished a conversation. It was great. And then we're in my house, and Conan's just sort of hanging out. And in my mind, I'm like, and he's a large guy. He's like 6'6", and in my mind, it's sort of like, well, I know that, it's not like we're going to hang out now just because we had this conversation. When I'm not going to go to dinner at his house, or, this is really the end of the line for this thing. And And, you know, he's just sort of standing around. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, how do I get Conan out of my house? I mean, it's just awkward because, like, there's no way to really end this. I mean, I don't even know how to say goodbye. Like, all right, I'll see you. I guess on the show if you put me on it, you know. So it was awkward. But, you know, we were both awkward in that moment. And he left, and it worked out okay. He's doing fine. It didn't seem to bother him.
Yeah. First to come and last to leave, Conan. Mark, I want to thank you for taking the time to do this. I know you're a busy guy and you're working all the time. Mark Maron, it's called Attempting Normal. Thanks so much.
Great talking to you. Take care.
It's great talking to you. Oh, yeah. There's the book. Here, you deserve this book. Here, you can have it. Okay, make up here. That's a $10 value. It's better than him being here. We probably wouldn't like him in person anyway. He's kind of intimidating. All right, that was great. Okay.
Okay, we'll do a quick number here, and you can...
And then what?
And then you go in the audience and speak to the lovely people.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I'll do that, sure. What the heck?
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Okay, here now, Maggie Catter. Huh? Hi, how are you?
Good.
Says here, my bonehead dad decided to drive here and then got lost looking for the parking garage.
Easy to do.
Huh? Your bonehead dad? Is that him sitting right next to you there?
Yeah.
Is that what we call our dad when he's sitting right next to us? That's a little extreme.
Hi. Yeah, so we're staying at a hotel that's, I don't know, maybe it would be kind of a walk, but he was like, well, why walk? Why don't we go? We have to get... He thought the show started at 9 also. Yeah. So we were...
Bonehead.
He's a bonehead. So, and he was driving around trying to find the parking garage, and he couldn't find it.
It basically is a parking garage.
He was like, I see it, but how do I get in? And there's a lot of one-way streets, and there was a block off, and it was just one disaster after the other. It was pretty funny.
It's like Kafka's parking garage. You can see it, but you can never actually get to it, like the castle, you know. Do you want to respond to that, sir?
Oh, there's nothing I could possibly say.
Okay, well said. All right, and then we got the Wisniewskis are here, too, right? Are they back? Oh, yes. Don Wisniewski.
Hey, good pronunciation.
Yeah, well, I'm from Milwaukee, you know. Yeah, the south side, so I know how to do that. South Bend, and what's going on with you here now?
My kid is in town for a hockey camp, and I didn't feel like sitting around the rink all day, so I saw, hey, I was here 20 years ago, and I'll get some tickets and come here, so here I am.
Yeah, every 20 years we see Wisniewski here. Pretty good. And you said, well, is it farm days or something today? Or what is it?
Cows
on the concourse day. What a day for you.
I had the same problem they had with the parking garage, so I'm driving around, and I look over, and I smell something, and I'm looking over, and I see these cows right next to the Capitol building.
And
then there's farm tractors and equipment and stuff, and this is awesome. I feel like I'm in Indiana.
Well, we had to get rid of legislators and put in cows instead. So it works out a little bit better, because you can at least sell the milk and stuff. You know, so. Nice to see you, Wisniewski. Every 20 years, I expect to see you here. You guys, be nice to your dad. Be nice to your dad. I can say that as a blockhead dad myself. Be nice to him. So here's a chance for you to play the quiz. You didn't get a chance the first time, probably. Here's your chance. Can you come down all the way to the aisle over here? And I will meet you there. And we'll see if this is going to work out or not. One of those, you know, things where you just get a feeling for it. Yeah, come on down here if you would, dear. How are you?
I'm fine. I can't believe you picked me.
Yes. Well, I saw you there, and I couldn't resist.
Suzanne.
Are you from around here, Suzanne?
Madison.
Are you? Okay. What are you doing these days?
I am a project manager. I
work for Sub-Zero and Wolf.
Okay, cool. Suzanne, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because I put my hand up.
Because she put her hand up. That's what a project manager would come up with. Come on up here, Suzanne. Walk this way. I'll show you how to do it. We negotiate these steps, and then we're practically there, and you can have a seat right there next to the emu.
Is that other guy's water?
Yeah, that's a little water here. I got some water. There we go. This is a brand new water. For you, yeah. We'll recycle that one.
Probably a little stevia in there, too.
All right, we're full service here, pretty much. Okay, so, okay, now the headphones again. Okay, I can do this. There. How are things?
Really
pretty
nervous.
Good?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Project manager, and what sort of projects would these be then?
Mostly IT, information technologies, developing software, purchasing software.
Wow.
Upgrading hardware.
Sounds pretty like good, that. This job.
It is fun. I really enjoy it.
Would you advise going into that field if someone is looking for...
Yes, actually. I think it's a growing field.
Growing field.
It's a good future.
And what do you do for kicks? Are you a clogger, clog dancing, or...
I'm an artist.
You're an artist?
Yes.
Do you paint or sculpt?
I do
or?
Collage and clay.
Yeah? Oh, how cool.
Yeah, here in Madison.
Oh, excellent. And you are you in the galleries? Do you show?
No, I don't have enough time to make enough to do a show, so I mostly end up donating it for an auction or something.
Yeah, well, how cool. That's good balance for the IT stuff, isn't
Yes, it is.
Okay, Suzanne. Someone out there plays along with you? You know how this works?
Yes, I watched the earlier sessions.
Well,
so.
don't go by that. That was David on it. Okay, so, someone out there will collaborate with you as soon as we get them, right?
That's right. They have to call 1-800-942-5669. And correctly answer a qualifying question.
Okay. How many things are on the Internet of Things? Within, I'd say, a couple billion. Okay? Is that fair to say? Within a couple billion?
Yep.
You hear about the Internet of Things, and the point where everything eventually will be on the Internet, connected. Your toaster will be connected to you, to your heart, and everything else. So we want all this Internet of Things. How many things currently are on the Internet of Things? It's in the billions. And if you can guess that, then Alice Feldman from Memphis, you will be on the show. How are you?
I'm fine.
We're not related, Alice. We're not related. I want people to know this.
No, I bet we are. I have no idea, but I am your long-lost cousin from Kiev.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, my grandmother's maiden name was Feldman. She came from Kiev.
Okay.
But,
we'll have to do some cheek swabs and figure that out. But for right now... How many things on the Internet of Things, would you say, in the billions?
Well, let's see. How many cats do I have? About 5 billion?
How many what do you have?
Cats? I have, you've heard of border collies?
Yes.
I have border cats, yeah. Anyway.
Okay. No, I need a number here like 12 said, 13, said, 14 billion, somewhere in there. 15 billion?
15
billion?
Yeah.
We said within 2 billion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 13 billion is right. Alice Feldman, formerly of Kiev. How do you like that?
Real last name is Fallon. He's named me Feldman because of my mishpacha. But anyway, go ahead.
That's okay. That's okay. Alice, this is Suzanne.
Hi, Alice.
Hi. Wow, let me turn this thing off.
Yeah, turn the thing off.
And
she's your partner, and what do you do when you're not calling into radio shows, Alice?
Well, as I say, I'm into rescue big time, but I do work at the IRS, believe it or not.
Oh, you do? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'd rather not believe it, I guess. But
okay.
So Alice and Suzanne, the two of you, collaborate together on various categories such as these.
Such as current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay. Alice, you pick the first one. What would you like?
Oh, my goodness. Odds and ends.
Odds and ends. Okay. I got it right here, as a matter of fact. Your skeleton would have to be at least how old to be the oldest skeleton in the new world? Would have to be 17,000 years old, 21,000, or 33,000 years old to now qualify as the oldest skeleton in the new world?
I heard this on NPR. Do you know, Suzanne?
Yeah, I just read a book about this. Reading Ishmael, the mind and something, I don't know. Oh. It was old, so I'd say 30,000.
30,000?
I'll go along with you.
30, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can accept that. Why quibble about skeletons? They don't actually know how old it is anyway. Somewhere between 17 and 30,000.
Okay.
Good guess. We'll take that.
I was waiting for you. Don't you usually like tell us when we're close?
I know, but yeah. Who has time for these things?
Okay.
That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay.
Categories remaining are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school or science.
Suzanne?
People.
People, okay. I'll try to be more exacting on this one. If you are a millennial, whatever that is, what do you hate most about other drivers when you're out driving as a millennial? Is it their SUV? Is it their obvious texting behind the wheel? Or is it the slow drivers in the passing lanes? This is for people in their, what is a millennial, in their 20s?
20. Pretty much. So they were born in 2000, right? The millennials?
Oh, I'm much over that, older than that. But the third one is my pet peeve.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking we saw somebody almost get hit on the way here because they were on their phone and they went through a red light. And
yeah, there's that too. Oh,
yeah, so I was thinking the phone thing, but...
Oh, that's not the third.
Yeah.
Was that the third one?
No, that's the slow drivers in the passing lane.
Yeah, do you think it's the slow drivers in the passing lane?
Well, as I say, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Alice, you lean towards that?
I'm sorry?
That's right.
Yeah.
Slow drivers in the fast lane, number one peeve. For older people like us, it's tailgaters. If you're a baby boomer, you hate the tailgaters because they're right behind you.
That's two right and zero wrong.
Okay.
Categories remaining are current events, places, things you should have learned in school or science.
Okay. Alice, back to you. What would you like?
Places.
Okay. Are you allowed drones over Yosemite or no? So if people are going to have a lot of drones these days, can you fly one over Yosemite or can't you? Over your average, not average, but over your national park.
Does this have anything to do with making movies?
Whatever you're doing it for, I have no idea why you'd be flying a drone in the first place. But are drones allowed over Yosemite, or are they not?
They are. Suzanne, maybe you know this one, too.
I don't know, but I don't think that you're allowed to fly drones. I think generally they haven't said you can.
That's right. No drones. All shapes and sizes of drones are banned over your national park. Holy cow, that was too easy. Do you want to go on? We have time here, don't we?
Yeah, sure.
To go for the whole shebang?
Yeah, well, they've won.
Yes, they've won.
We won.
Yes,
and you could go for the mother load with one more question if you want to.
Well, do you want to? That was the question.
Sure.
Kit and caboodle?
Yeah, let's
kit
go
and caboodle,
for it.
Alice. Yeah. Just for you. Okay.
Good. So the categories to choose from are current events, things you should have learned in school, or science.
Is it your turn?
I did go to school. We could learn that. We could do things you should have learned in school.
In school. Okay. Romantic relationships. For the neurotic, this is something you should have learned in school.
That's so perfect. You don't even know.
Are they a good thing or not so much, according to psychologists? Romantic relationships for the neurotic.
Oh.
Is it a good idea or not so much?
It definitely sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Okay, but looking at it in a new light.
But if I think about it a little more...
Could it be a stabilizing effect on a neurotic?
Oh, it could, you know. Alistair,
I've never been in a relationship where there wasn't one neurotic involved, so I have no idea.
And then who isn't neurotic, really?
Yes. Yes. That's a good point.
So I think it's probably a great idea.
Well, I don't know if it's a great idea, but... So you're saying, yes, it can have a stabilizing effect on a neurotic in a relationship?
Absolutely, yes.
Alice, you agree with that?
Yes, I do.
Yes, that's exactly right. So if you're neurotic, go for it. Holy cow.
Suzanne, you can combine the best balance of heavy dozing and fine grading performance in miniature with a Cat D7E track-type tractor with electric drive, a die-cast model replica.
Have that?
It's a replica.
Oh, wow.
It's a model. From Caterpillar, Inc. And then Polka Like a Polka King with the Vern Meisner, a Meisner mix CD from Vern Meisner Records.
Oh, yeah,
look cultured and refined wearing a Ten Chimneys t-shirt, which comes with its own newsletter from the Ten Chimneys Foundation.
Oh, sure.
Welcome the onslaught of our six-legged friends with a polymer Yipes bug pin from the Joyce Fritz Studios. And find out how to get your own radio show in Something I Said, Innuendo and Out the Other by Michael Feldman from Terrace Books. Alice, distinguish between Socratic monologues and Platonic dialogues by reading Glad You Asked,
podcast, Intriguing Names, Facts, and Ideas for the Curious Minded by Michael Feldman, from the editors of Encyclopedia Britannica and Triumph Books. Then fill that giant kielbasa with a dozen Iowa Art Museum magnets, a Where to Be Kenosha News can cooler, Mary Sloan's Missouri Theater Visions of the Past and Future, a pin from the Door County Visitors Bureau, a Celebrate Erie 2006 Frisbee, a jar of medium sweet salsa from Sanchez Specialties in Almond, Wisconsin, and what do you know, the party game. All available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
Suzanne, congratulations on winning that. Alice, hang on for a second. We'll get an address from you. Congratulations.
What Do You Know returns to the Monona Terrace for another live show on June 21st. Reserve your seat today at notmuch.com. And if you're planning your next Madison outing, bring the whole gang to Monona Terrace for a live What Do You Know broadcast. Click over to notmuch.com for special group pricing and get your tickets today. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer with assistance from Chris Myshak,
thanks for coming,
Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock,
too,
Kelly Osborne, and Diana Cook.
You
our technical director
you.
Is Tom Blaine, with help from Aubrey Ralph and Brad Colbert.
And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. One way or another, I thought we had a show next week. You know? I'm coming anyway. Meet me here. Boys in the band. Sarah.
PRI, Public Radio International.